The pressure to innovate is constant. It can be crippling, or it can be a catalyst for your best thinking and your best work. Every year, Harvard Business School Executive Education helps executives like you understand the forces that drive change and find new approaches to compete and win on innovation. Change course. Get ahead. Go. Start by going to hbs.me/go. That's hbs.me/go.
Blog Talk Radio.
And I apologize for the empty air. This is not obviously typical of me or my show, and I'll get it together. Just work with me, for a minute, and I'll be better for the whole situation, because if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, and I absolutely believe that. But I'm thinking about liquidating my friends and selling everything, you know, my cars, my property, the whole nine, and, doing something else. I don't know what. The problem with that is that I have a very young child whom I don't have custody of, and his mother won't give me custody, even though she knows I'm in a better position than she is to raise the child. And so I can't leave him. I can't abandon him to her. I would not do that. My father abandoned me, and it's not a nice feeling. My mother did too, so I don't want to only say my father. So it's not a nice position to be in when you have no family as a consequence of your parents being irresponsible. And I would not do that to my child. I brought him in this world intentionally. It wasn't a conscious decision. And I certainly would not, in my age, I'm not advanced age yet, but certainly, you know, as a middle-aged professional, I know better than to abrogate one's responsibilities. So I am in the midst of turmoil. Not that I haven't been before, but this has been awful because it was what we call in literature a preventable tragedy. It really was. And I'm not going to get into it beyond that, but that's where I am today, people. And it's been tough because, you know, everybody has their own issues, so. And I can't burden people, calling them constantly all day long and stuff like that, you know, whining, complaining about my plight or my grief or my bereavement. And so, you know, I'm just dealing with it. But, you know, I know a lot of it has to do with how we are here as a people. You know, and I hate to say this, I really do, because I was telling somebody last night, I don't know who it was, a friend of mine invited me over for dinner. Because I was, you know, so sad, and they know I hadn't eaten in a couple of days, you know. Not that I was hungry, but they gave me a, you know, relatively modest-sized plate. And I consumed it, and it was good, but I didn't want any more than that. You know, I only eat basically once a day. Anyway, and I was telling them that, you know, Trump says that, and Stephen King, you know, this nut from Iowa, representative, he might be a senator. No, Stephen King isn't a senator. He's a representative from Iowa. And he said that, you know, when did white nationalism become a pejorative? I mean, is this guy serious? I mean, you know. So in response to that, I say that I'm a black nationalist, and I really am, always have been. But you know what? And I was sharing this with my friend last night when I was over the house eating. I said, you know, when I was in Europe, generally, and you know, one country specifically, which will remain unnamed, I was treated much differently. The interaction was much different than from Americans. And I realized at the core, not that I am European, you know, or, you know, have European sensibilities, but then I just must, or I just might, because the issues that I've been confronted with here in the United States, you know, I was born, raised, educated here. Obviously, I'm an American. My parents are American, my grandparents, and on and on and on. And we could probably trace our lineage if I did a genealogy, but I've been reluctant to do it only because, you know, until we stop monetizing everything in this country, which is another reason why I'm thinking about pulling up stakes and just getting out of Dodge. I might even go to Mexico, you know. Who knows? I haven't made a decision. I really haven't. But I'm done. I'm really tired of this country. And you know, the reason I say that is because, you know, the shutdown illustrated that Whitey is determined to continue to hold on to power, irrespective of how much turmoil that objective causes. Now, there is no one in the United States or on Earth that doesn't know that this shutdown has affected 800+ thousand people. That is a significant number, even though we're a big country. But those people spend their money in stores that don't have those sales, in restaurants that don't have those sales, on bills that cannot be paid. And this guy is sitting in the White House, you you know, acting as though he doesn't have to make a decision because he painted himself in a corner. And you know, I was sharing this yesterday that, and maybe I'm talking myself into leaving. I don't know, because I just had the best time of my life when I was in Europe. I really did. The people said what they meant and meant what they said. And I don't know that is typical. All I know is that was my experience, which is anecdotal and it's biographical, admittedly. And by the way, those that want to call and wish me condolences, please, I appreciate it. 215-383-8372, 215-383-8372. But I can remember, you know, I was a young guy, but I wasn't super young when I went to Europe. You know, I was a young guy, but I was, you know, I had been around a while. And I remember I had a birthday party. And I'm not going to say which one, but I had a birthday party, and I invited, you know, everybody that I knew from school and, you know, friends that I met. And do you know that everybody to a person came? Everyone. I swear to God, God is my witness. I was stunned because as an American, I'm not used to that. I have friends that know that my companion, my girlfriend, has passed, and they have not called me back. I talked to them, and they haven't called Dennis, how are you doing, whatever. I mean, it's just the callousness, you know, and this comes from the rugged individualism that we subscribe to in this country, you know, which makes us cold and callous and really unfeeling. And we just go through the motions, you know, whether we're Christian or Muslim or Jewish or Hindu or Buddhist, you know, being an American, you know, in some way, allows your orientation, your religious philosophy, your outlook, your perspective, everything, you know, to be subsumed by, you know, this false narrative that we're exceptional. We're not exceptional. What is exceptional about the United States of America? We came over here and, you know, conquered Native Americans, not we, you know, bringing in tow Africans from the continent that were sold into bondage by avaricious chiefs, admittedly. We don't deny that, but that's not the point. The point is that what the historians don't say, for whatever reason, we know their objective, is that slavery has existed from time immemorial. The difference between the slavery here in the United States, which we call chattel slavery, is that slaves were able to move up. In sociology, it's called upward mobility. And they were able to, you know, work their way out of bondage, become part of the family, whatever. Here in the United States, they dehumanized the Africans that they had brought here, which is why we see vestiges, 40% of this country that is so racist, because I deal with people all the time, you know, as a business person and as just, you know, as a professional, just as a person. And we are so disdainful. You know, even in the African American community, you know, for those that have quote unquote made it, you know, there seems to be a penchant to look down one's nose at those who are more or less fortunate than us. And I never understood that, you know. Because some people, you know, remain in their circumstance due to whatever. You know, and I'll certainly bear witness to that. But I don't think that you can broadly attribute one circumstance to an entire group of people, or even a segment or a sub-segment or a subgroup of people in this country. And this is what they have done, you know, because I've dealt with people, you know, especially, you know, like white working class males who are very disrespectful, and they don't care, you know, what your educational level is. If you are black, you are to them a nigga, you know, and that's all they care about. And this is why Chump the Brain Dead comic Carnival Bark, a.k.a. Clueless the Clown, enjoys such wide support among persons living in rural areas of this country, which are predominantly white. They don't live in the inner cities. They don't live in metropolitan areas for the most part. I'm not talking about all. Obviously, this is a generalization. I'm saying that the vast majority of people that support Trump live in rural areas. That is a fact. This is why Sharpton's partner, Charles Williams, Reverend Williams out of Detroit, Michigan, where I lived and taught for a number of years, suggested that if we came out in large enough numbers, especially in these large metropolitan areas, which are densely populated, New York, Boston, you know, Chicago, Detroit, and on and on and on, Miami, and we can go on and on and on, all these, Indianapolis, all these densely populated urban centers, we could easily run this country. But, you know, I hear a lot of blacks, and, you know, that brought into the myth, and this is what saddens me a lot. And, you know, people that listen to me notice for a fact that it's a lot of African-Americans, and primarily males, but there's some females that have brought into the myth of white exceptionalism or white supremacy and American exceptionalism, that way. And as a consequence, they actually support someone who would not, you know, give them the time of day, you know, given any ordinary circumstances. I mean, and I don't understand that degree of folly. I've never have, and I never will. I just don't get it. I don't understand it, that you don't understand that this man does not have your interests at heart. And anyone that supports him knows that. But they don't care because he has said outright, it's not even a dog whistle anymore, that I am with you, I am with Whitey. That's what he said. I mean, you know, people act like, you know, this guy is everything but what he is, which is a ignorant bigot that ascended to the highest office on earth through conspiracy, collusion, bullying. So, at any rate, let's take a break, come back on the other side of the break, and try to get through this show.
Looking for a hip multimedia management company that can manage you, your service, product, or your next multimedia project? Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level. At East New York Management, we can produce and post-produce your project into a sleek finished product. We write scripts, slow-mos, blurs, and spots that are tight, hot, and bumpy. Liners that flow smoothly with wit as well as with verb. We also manage talent, produce, and post-produce shows that are on the cutting edge, reflecting the undeniable influence of hip-hop on popular culture. The most important thing that we can bring to your product is energy, enthusiasm, and a love for the creative process. Look for us on the World Wide Web at www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Call us at 347-846-8447 or email us at contact@eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Do not waste another minute with whack, boring, and uncreative multimedia and talent management companies. Bring your talent or project to East New York Management. Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level.
And you're back here on the Marketing Bulb International New York District. Yours truly, Dennis Shipman, 10:49 a.m. Monday. Monday, 1/14/2019, 26 degrees here and sunny in Brooklyn, New York. And I was, you know, talking at the onset of the show about my loss, my longtime companion and girlfriend and bosom buddy, partner just passed. And, you know, it's just an awful situation, not only because of my grief, but because of how it occurred. And, you know, persons that are, you know, callous. And this is what I was talking about at the other side of the break. You know, it's just the callousness, you know. It's just, I didn't see that in Europe. And, you know, and ironically, and I was just thinking about this, and I was saying, you know, I really, you know, and I am going to fast and pray about this. I'm not going to make a precipitous or impetuous decision. But a good friend of mine, or a preacher, as a matter of fact, just pulled up stake and left. I kid you not. His uncle left him a church. I don't know what happened with the church or anything. I can't even remember the name of the church. But I remember when he was ordained, he invited me to his ordination, and I didn't go, and that's a lot. I have some regrets in my life, and that's one of them. I should have went to the guy's ordination. It was over 10 years ago, so it's been quite a while. So at any rate, he left to pursue his doctorate in Germany. I guess they have an English language program over there. I don't know how he funded it, and I'm curious to ask him. But I think his wife, I'm not sure, don't quote me his gospel on that, is biracial. Or she's not. She lived there. I don't know. I'm speculating. So let me just put it this way. I think that his wife was from Germany. I don't know how or, you know, what her relationship to the country is. But he pulled up stakes and just left. Now, I don't know that I want to go to Germany or back to Europe at all. And obviously, you know, I just can't do that without considering, you know, the fact that I do have a child. You know, so, but I I'm feeling the desire to get out of here. I think we're just too, I don't think that this country can ever come back. I don't. And I know that there are a lot of persons who would disagree with me. And that's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with this. This is just my opinion. I don't have any proof. You know, I don't have any data, any polls or polling that would suggest that what I suspect as a social and behavioral scientist, as someone who has studied human behavioral traits and determinants for, you know, most of my professional life, that will ever come back. Because I think that what Chump the Brain Dead comic Carnival Barker has done is what some whites have always wanted done in this country. This is why 40%, which is a substantial number, think about it. And Malcolm Nance, former intelligence analyst, or not analyst, but you worked with the U.S. Navy and other departments, has said is that we're not only fighting one man, we're fighting 40 million people. And, you know, as this has gone on longer and longer and longer, now we have a government shutdown where, you know, African Americans are overrepresented in the federal workforce, the federal merit system, federal civil service, whatever you want to call it. That's a fact. Everybody knows that. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday whose daughter, they have to support. They have to give money for rent and food and light bills and all this good stuff. I kid you not. Because, you know, apparently the daughter has no significant other and works for the government, and you know they're not going to let her, you know. Of course, whether you're an adult or not, you know, so it's awful. And I think, you know, the degree of callousness that we see evident here is because even if Trump doesn't know that these people are, I can't imagine he doesn't. He knows that the federal workforce is 30, 40% African American, if not larger. You know, I'd like to look up the numbers, but I know that they're overrepresented, you know, in terms of our composition in the United States, which is about 11, 12, maybe 13%. The Hispanics have overtaken us. But that doesn't concern me simply because Hispanics are an ethnicity. They're not a race. So you can have black Hispanics, white Hispanics, Asian Hispanics. Yes, you do. Filipinos are Asian Hispanics. They don't speak Spanish anymore, but they did at one time. Now they reverted to their native tongue, which is Tagalog. You know, so that doesn't concern me. But what does concern me is the fact that, you know, we brought into this false narrative of American exceptionalism, which is nothing more than a whitewash, pun intended, of white supremacy. And I'm done with it. I think that I'm too old now to want to deal with this anymore, to deal with the battle. I mean, you know, the nice cars. I have all of that, man. I really do. But I'm so unhappy because of how we are in this country towards one another. I mean, you know, we have no regard. We have no regard for the disadvantaged, for the poor, for the disabled, for the elderly. We used to. That's why in the 30s, you know, under the Hoover administration, when we were going through the Great Depression, man, he created the Social Security Act in 1935. Think about it. And Lyndon Baines Johnson expanded it in the 1960s with his war on poverty programs, you know. And so we had aid to children with aid to families with dependent children and that sort of thing. AFDC, which was eliminated in the Clinton administration in the mid-90s, you know, which was stupid. Clintons did a lot of dirt to us, man, especially African Americans, you know. The Fair Credit Reporting Act used to be a 7-year limitation on reporting, you know, adverse and derogatory information, and he gave them carte blanche to extend it almost indefinitely, you know. Supposed to drop off, you know, negative or adverse information, even though the creditors can renew. I don't know how they're able to do that, but they can. But this is part of what he did. He allowed them to renew. They shouldn't be able to renew, you know, because you have some people with adverse or derogatory information in their credit reports that inhibits them from getting good insurance, even jobs, you know, houses, cars, you know, you name it. And this was all under the Clinton administration, and then you go on and on and on, and I can go on and on and on about a lot of stuff, but I'm not. I'm just sad beyond belief, family. So at any rate, I'm going to end for the day. Have a great week, and I'll be back with you next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Oh,
coincidence. Nation always at war. Can afford.
You're looking for meaning and purpose in your work.
Hello?
Hello?
We all are. Every year, Harvard Business School Executive Education helps executives like you reevaluate goals and develop both personally and professionally to turn their careers into their callings. Don't be different. Be changed. Go. Start by going to hbs.me/go. That's hbs.me/go.